Today's shir is Masechta Bava Basra Daf Nun Zayin. We will begin Daf Nun Vav Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom. We had learned in the Mishnah Shloisha Achim, if we have three brothers, Va'echad, and then another individual, Mitztarfinim, he can combine with them. And now we have Sherein Shalosh Edis. The Halacha views this as three separate Edis for each year of the 3 year Chazaka, but as we discussed when we learned the Mishnah, as far as Hilchas Hazama are concerned, it's considered one Edus. We gave a number of explanations that if they become Muslim, they all have to pay together, and that all of them have to become Muslim in order that it should be considered Edus Hazama. Says the Gemara, Hu shtar davich simile beitrei. There was a document on which two Edim was signed, and as we often have in Shas, there was a need for Kiyum Shtaris. For although the Gemara Masechta Ksubas teaches us quite extensively, Edom HaChsumim al Shtar, of Edom assigned on a Shtar, Nasa Edosun Kamisha Nekra Edusa Mebezdim, the Halacha views that document as perfectly fine. Chazal instituted the concept of Kiyum Shtaris. And what Kiyum Shtaris accomplishes is by verifying the Edom on the Shtar, we know for sure that the Shtar is effective. And there are a number of ways as we learn the sugyas of Kiyum Shtaris, how to accomplish Kiyum Shtaris. The Rambam in Hilchas Eidus, Perek Vav, Halacha Beis, in the Shulchan Aruch, in Choshe Mishpat, Simen Mem Vav, Siv Zayin, gives five different ways on how to be Mekayim Mishtar. One is that the Dayanim recognize the signature. Another way is that the Edom in question should sign their names in front of the Dayanim. And by signing the names in front of the Dayanim, will be able to recognize that this is their signature. Another way is that the Edom who are signed on the Shtar should come and testify to Beis Din that this is our signature on the Shtar. Other Edom should come and say testimony that we recognize that these are the signatures of these two Edom, or that we have other verified shtaris available, and we know, and then on those shtaris, those shtaris have the same edim as this shtar, and given that shtar was a verified shtar, that will make this shtar into a verified shtar. But here, what happened was, shachav chad minayu, one of the two edim who was signed on the shtar that were looking to verify, passed away. V'asa achad ahay dekoy v'chad achrina, the brother of the aid who's alive and came with somebody else, to say testimony on the signature of the dead person and thereby be mekayim the shtar. In other words, had the person who was signed on the shtar not have passed away, so as we just said, each one of the aidim could come and say, I know that this is my signature. Here, because one of these two Edom who are assigned on the Shtar was no longer alive, so what we need to do is bring people to say testimony on the Shtar. Because even if the aid who's alive were able to recognize the signature of his partner, it wouldn't work. Because you can't have one aid, as we're going to learn in our Shir, accomplish more than 50%. So if somebody's saying that this is my signature, and he's also saying testimony on the other signature, so that means it's more than 50% on one person. So Ravina Lameimer, want to say, Hainam Asnissen, Shloisha Achim, if you have three brothers, Vechen, and then a third, then another priority, Mitztarf Imam, that since the brothers are not speaking about the same year, so we don't have here a disqualification of two brothers saying Edus together, which of course is disqualified. Two brothers cannot be Edim together. So Rav Nachman said, thought that by Kim Shtar will be the same. The brother, the person who is alive, is not saying Edus together with the person, with his brother. Because the person who's alive, the Ed that's still alive, is saying testimony strictly about his own signature. And his brother is saying testimony on the other person's signature. And therefore, this should not be considered a situation of two brothers saying testimony together. The Rishonim Tosfos point out that the Gemara could have given us a fairly simple solution how to deal with this situation. And that is what the Gemara could have suggested, is that the person, the aide who's still alive, should sign his name on a piece of paper, which, as we just quoted, the Rambam telling us that since that person could sign, that's a way of being Mekayim the Shtar, so I don't need him to say testimony on his signature. His signature is already identified to us through his own signature, and then he could be an aide on the other signature. But the Gemara teaches us if the Gemara is seeking to discover if there's another way of doing this. And is the brother, together with another person on the signature of the person who's not alive, going to work? Amalei Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says, Mi dami. Hasam, in the case of the brothers with the chazaka, Le'nafik nechri river the moena p'yached, the 75% of the money is not coming out through the brothers. And therefore, it's not a violation of Pishnei Edom that aid can't do more than 50%. Hacha, but in our case, when we have this shtar with the two signatures, one aid is Baruch Hashem still alive, and he's saying this is my signature. So that covers 50%. Now we have the other signature of the aid who is no longer alive. When we look at that signature, so we have two people testifying about that signature. The two people are testifying. One is a brother of the aide who's still alive, and one is another individual. So it turns out that 75% of the kiyum is being accomplished by brothers. And brothers can't combine to be equal to more than 50%. And therefore, the two cases that we're discussing are not similar. And even though in our Mishnah it would be acceptable, here it wouldn't. Mm-hmm. We've been focusing primarily in our perek about Cheskes Karka, where we have a dispute over property and who is the owner of property. But there's also, as we've mentioned in our perek, a concept of Cheskes Tashmishin. If I do something on your property, that I'm allowed to do something on your property, and you haven't said anything, the question is, do I establish a chazaka? And, for example, I have a chazaka that you allow me to leave things on your property. You let me park my car in your driveway. Or you let me leave things in your driveway. Or we're going to have you let me open up a window into your property. So then, the halacha is, you could establish a chazaka. So as we started the perek, we know that there are two fundamental halachas when we speak about Cheskes Karka, taking ownership on property. One is that you don't achieve a chazaka unless you were there for 3 years. And the other halacha is that you have to have a taina, as the Mishnah taught us in Daf Mem Aleph, kol chazaka she'enem my taina. A chazaka in its own doesn't give you ownership. The chazaka has to be accompanied with a claim why this property belongs to you. And as we've mentioned, by chazakas tashmishim, there's a number of machloikas rishonim. One question is, does Cheskes Tashmishim need to have 3 years? Or can you accomplish a Cheskes Tashmishim in less than 3 years? And the other question, when we speak about Cheskes Tashmishim, does Cheskes Tashmishim have to have a taina? That means if I'm parking in your driveway, do I have to be able to say I bought the right to park there, or that you gave me a gift, the right to park there, or the fact that I've been doing it and you haven't said anything is enough to accomplish
a Cheskas Tashmishin. And now, as we said, the Gemara, we're going to begin focusing as we come towards the end of our Perek Baruch Hashem on Cheskas Tashmishin. It says the Mishnah that Elu Dvarim Yeshlam Chazaka. The following situation, you have a Cheskas Tashmishin. Ve'elu Dvarim She'elam Chazaka. And the following situation, you cannot accomplish a Cheskas Tashmishin. Says the Gemara, Hoye Mamed Behemah B'chotzer. If I put an animal into your property, or Tanner, I put an oven in your property, Rechaim, I put a mill, the Kraim is a smaller oven, Begal Tanagoylim, or am I raising chickens, the nice and zivle b'chotzer, or I put my manure in your chotzer, all of these situations ain't a chazaka. They don't accomplish a chazaka. What's the reason they don't accomplish chazaka? Because the fact that I'm doing it doesn't represent that it became my right to do it. All it represents is that you allowed me to do it. And people don't care when somebody does something like this in their chatzar. And because people don't care when somebody does something like this in their chatzar, the fact that you didn't say anything doesn't really mean anything. The reason you didn't say anything is because in your mind, this wasn't a big deal, that you should feel the need to be meicha. And therefore, your lack of mecha doesn't in any way represent anything. The Rashbam, however, makes a very interesting distinction. The Rashbam wants to suggest, well, it depends. If I only was there for a short amount of time, so suggest the Rashbam that yes, that's not the way that you'll make a chazaka, because you didn't say anything because it's not a big deal, it's not something worth speaking about. But says the Rashbam, even by things that aren't so significant, if I do it for a very long time, that may make a difference. And therefore, since that may make a difference, there may be a chazaka even in this type of situation. Continues the Mishnah. If I built a wall, if I built a wall around these ovens or mill, if I brought chickens into your home, or I made a place for the manure, which is Amik Shloisha, 3 tefachim deep, or Gvoya Shloisha, 3 tefachim high, and I was there for a while, Hareza Chazak, again, depending on the different opinions, the Harezu Chazaka, then I have a Chazaka, because these are the kind of things that bother other people. And if I would not have a right to do these things, you certainly would have said something. And as we mentioned, a common situation of this type of a situation is when we come speak about parking spaces and people having Chazaka on parking spaces. And the Chashuk Echemed discusses a situation where a house was built, and at the time the house was built, there was a empty space in front or in the back of the house, and very few people who lived in that property, in that house, had cars, and the people who did have cars, so to speak, developed chazaka for their parking. And however, as the years went by, more and more people had bought cars, and they claim that why should these parking spaces belong to you any more than they belong to us? The reason we didn't say anything, they said, is why should we say something? You have a car, you have cars, you need to have a place to park them. We didn't own cars. We didn't have to have a place where to own them. So we didn't say anything. But now we also have cars. So what's da halacha? So he establishes a very important rule. He says, this happens particularly, it seems, in Eretz Yisrael often enough. He says that what it's da halacha if somebody wanted to make an extension to his house. And to be able to make an extension to his house, you have to get your neighbor's permission. And your neighbor gave you permission. He wants to be nice. He gave you permission. And then, years later, the neighbor who gave you permission would now like to make an extension to his house. But yours not as nice. And you don't give permission. What is the halacha? So he says that what is assumed in the halacha is that I gave you permission. When I gave you permission, the understanding is that I'm giving you permission because you want to make an extension. And part of that represents that when I will want to make an extension, you're giving me permission. So you have no right, unless there's extenuating circumstances that change the situation. But under normal circumstances, what the halacha says to us is that it's self-understood that I have permission to make an extension. So he says he applies a similar concept in this case as well. When the people gave permission to these neighbors to have parking spaces because they had cars and they did not, what the halacha really is saying is that I gave you permission because why shouldn't I give you permission? You need to have a place to park your car, and I don't need a place to park my car. I don't have a car. But what is understood, assumed and understood, is that when I will need such a place, you'll give me a space if there is availability. And if there is no availability to give me a space, what's understood is that you will have to work something out. But it doesn't even though it wasn't said, it doesn't mean that that my permission to you is indefinite, and you could withhold, or you could have a permanent right against what I have here. So ask the Gemara. Mishnah Reisha, Mishnah Sefer. The Mishnah and the Reisha said different circumstances where I can't accomplish a chazaka, and then the Mishnah said in the Sefer different circumstances where a chazaka is established. So what is the determining factor in this? And the Ritva says the way to understand the Gemara's question, there's two ways of understanding the Gemara's question, says the Ritva. We can understand the Gemara's question is why in the Reisha are these different acts not a good way of accomplishing chazaka? Another way of explaining the Mishnah is why in the Sefer are these acts considered a way of establishing chazaka? Answers the Gemara, Amar Ula. As we've been discussing, when we speak about chazaka, there are many definitions on what the word chazaka is. There's a chazaka that we spoke about in the last number of shurim, which is an act of kinyan. And there's a chazaka by being on the property and the other person wasn't meichad in protest. That's how I accomplish chazaka. So Amar Ula, kol she'ilu b'nechse ager, any act of chazaka that if I was trying to take ownership of a nechse ager, or not just nechse ager, it could be even property owned by somebody else, but you gave me permission to do this, you sold it to me, and as we've discussed, one of the ways of taking ownership is by doing an act of chazaka. So it says ula kol she'ilu b'nechse ager kana, anything which would be able to accomplish ownership by nechse ager, b'nechse chaver kana. If I do this on somebody else's property, it shows ownership. However, anything which is not enough of an act, kol she'ilu b'nechse hager, anything which is not enough of an act of chazaka to take ownership of nechse hager, that b'nechse chaveroi, loy kan, if I do this on somebody else's property, it wouldn't be an act of chazaka. So the Rishonim ask a very powerful question. When we've been discussing what is considered an act of chazaka that accomplishes ownership, in our discussions, when we speak about these type of situations, we say that an act of chazaka has to represent that I improved that property. So they asked if the various cases of our Mishnah don't represent that I made an improvement. So bringing chickens doesn't improve the property. So why should it be considered an act of chazaka? So the Sefer Torah Chaim says a very bechiddush. He says Yes, till now we've always been learning that what is considered a act of chazaka, an improvement to the property. But says the Taras Chaim, that if I do something, an act, which is a very significant act, even if it's not an act of improvement, it's enough to make a chazaka. So for example, bringing chickens into a property, of course, doesn't necessarily improve the property, but it does represent a very serious act. And since it represents a very serious act, it can make a chazaka. Ask the Gemara, Maskelar Hashashis. So ask Rav Sheshi V'Klol, who is this? Is this a hard and fast rule? Hare near, plowing property. The Menichse Ger, if I do that in the property of a Ger, so following the definition of Chazaka, Kana, it would be a good Kenyan, because I made an improvement. Menichse Chaveroi, but just because I plow your field, like Kana, it doesn't mean because you didn't say anything that I own it. You'll say, you want to plow this person wants to plow my field. Okay. And the Gemara asks another question. Hare achilas peiris. The other way around. If I eat property from somebody's field, and I did this for 3 years, and he never said anything, that clearly is a proof that I own the property. Hare achilas peiris. The benichse chaveroi, in somebody else's property, if I'm doing it in somebody else's property, kana, it's a proof that I own the property, but it would not be an act of kinyan chazaka, of making chazaka, b'nechse ger, le'kanam. Says the Gemara, Ella Omer, Rav Nachman Omer Bavua, the way to understand the Mishnah is as follows. Hocha, Amish is speaking about chatzar shutz maskinen. Amish is speaking about the property is owned by two partners. But Madakdi, so there's certain things that partners don't care if one partner does it in the property on the other property. Kamadakadi, loy kapti. People don't care, and therefore it doesn't represent a way of establishing chazaka. Aval mechitza, even though I'm a partner here, you're not going to be happy that I should just build a mechitza on this property without your permission. And therefore, if I built it and you didn't say anything, that's why it's considered a valid chazaka. Ask the Gemara, is that true? That just because we're partners, if I leave something there, you don't care? Or by Amada Kadi Loi Kapti, partners don't care? For Tanan, the Mishnah in Masechta Nedarim Daf Mem Hei Amud Beis teaches us. Hashutvim Hashanadra Anozah Mizah. If two shutvim made a neder that they're not allowed to benefit one from the other, Asurim L'Kanas L'Chatzar. Neither of them, the one that can't have any benefit, can't walk into the Chatzar, even though he's a partner on the Chatzar. And by walking in, he violates L'Yachal Devarai. Now, the Gemara is learning now, this is the way the Rashbam explains the Gemara, that what does it mean that I made a neder, I can't have any benefit from you? Anything that's considered an act of benefit, I'm not allowed to have, and if I did, it would be a violation of a neder. So if we're saying that just walking into somebody else's property, is not such a big deal, so then the question is, why is it considered a violation of the neder if I walk into your property? It's not a big deal. It's not something that you really care about. So it should not be considered a violation of the neder. And there is a discussion amongst the Rishayim how to understand this Gemara. When the Gemara says that people don't care when people walk into their property, what does the Gemara mean to say that people don't care when people walk into their property? Is it the Gemara only speaking about shutvim? I am a partner here. So partner, since I am a partner here, and it's only walking in, so that's something that people don't care about. But of course, if I weren't a partner, then even though it's merely walking into the property, it's still something that you don't want should happen. And for that, people are makbid. Or do we understand the Gemara that in general, just walking into a property and not really doing anything on the property is not considered very significant. And since it's not considered very significant, people don't care about it. And not only don't they care about it when it's a partner who's doing it, they don't even care if an outsider is doing it, because they don't view this as a very serious act. So if it's not, but certainly by a partner, everybody agrees it's not considered significant. So if everybody considers it not significant, why, if somebody made a nether, can't he do it? Ela Amar of Nachman, Amar of Vua, Hoch Berchava Shal Chori Bat Yeskinen. We're speaking about the chotzer that's behind the house. The Chamada Kedi, at such an area, people don't care. The Mechitza Kapti, but on a Mechitza, they do care if you build something permanent there. Rava Papama, the way to understand both our Mishnah and the Mishnah in the Dorim, B'chutzah Hashotfim. Ika the Kapti, there's some that are do care when other people walk into the property. Vika the Loi Kapti. So explains the Gemara. Our Mishnah is a question of Mamoina. Our Mishnah is a question of Dine Mamonis. So by Dine Mamonis says the Gemara, I'm not allowed to use your money without permission, but when we don't know, we go Lakula and we're lenient. There, it's an issue of being over the a nether, an issue of being over the issa of Layachel Dvaroi, and therefore, by Isur, we go Lachumra. So the Gemara is differentiating between Mammon, where we're Makel, versus the situation of Isur, where we have to go with the Klal of Suffolk Deraisa Lachumra. And the way most Rishonim and Achronim explain the Gemara, the principle that's being used in our Gemara is Hamoitzim Mechaver Olav Araya. So by Mammon, if I have a right, we say Hamoitzim Mechaver Olav Araya. By other areas, we don't say that. So I saw that the Rav Shimon Shkop in the Shar Yosher, Shar Chamishi Perek Aleph, asks a question. He says a very, very fundamental question. He says, our Gemara is differentiating between Mammon, where we are lenient, and Isur, where we're Machmer. Asks Rav Shimon, every Mammon involves Isur, because if I use money that I'm not allowed to use, I'm violating the Isur of Leis Sigzel. So Leis Sigzel is not a situation of Mammon. Leis Sigzel is a situation of Isur. So how can we differentiate between Mammon and Isur? So Rav Shimon Zatzal in the Shari Yosha brings different opinions of Achroinim how to understand this. He quotes Rabbi Chil Bosson. He says that again the principle being Hamotzim Mechaveroi Olav Araya. So what he means to say is that I don't know if it's mine. I don't know if it's yours. I don't know if I have a right to use it. I don't have a right to use. So since we're stuck, the principle of Amotzi Mechaveiro, Olav Araya, says that that's what we should do. So Rav Shimon is dissatisfied with that explanation. Rav Shimon says that that if just because we don't know what to do doesn't allow us to do what's wrong. Then he quotes the Sefer Urim V'Tumim. The Urim V'Tumim has a different explanation. He says, he compares, we know there's Alocha, a Yovah Mamzer B'Kal Hashem. A Mamzer may not enter Klal Yisrael, we're not allowed to get married to a Mamzer. But the Alocha is, when we speak about Mamzerim, that Alocha only applies to a Vaday Mamzer, but not to a Sofik Mamzer. So says the Urim V'Tumim that the same thing will be by Gezel. The halacha is that only Vaday Gezel is Osir. Sofik Gezel is not Osir. And therefore, when we have a situation of Sofik, we'll follow the principle of Amoitz Mechaveiro Olav Araya. We'll follow the principle that where it is the way we'll treat it. And even though, truthfully, it may not be mine, but we can be lenient because it's only Sofik Gezel. On this explanation, Rav Shimon is also not satisfied. Because Rav Shimon asks that by a mamzer,
the Gemara has an explicit Rasha to teach us the Vade Mamzer and not a Suffolk Mamzer. It says of Shimon, where does the Urim Tumim find, asks Rav Shimon, that's the halacha by Gezel as well. That the halacha by Gezel will be that only Vade Gezel is Asur and not Suffolk Gezel. And therefore, he's not satisfied with that explanation either. So he takes a new approach. He says, what is Pshat when the Torah said Lo Sigzel? What is Pshat when the Torah says we're not allowed to steal? He says, what the Torah means to tell us, when it teaches us that we're not allowed to steal, that there has to be order in society. The society has to live with a certain sense of order, with a certain sense that somebody owns something, it's his, and may not be used by somebody else. That's the whole pshat of Lo Sigzel. So he says, when we have a suffix, this is the way I understand what Rav Shimon means to say, Rav Shimon's saying that when we have a suffix, what is the Torah telling us in the situation of a suffix? What the Torah is telling us in the situation of a suffix is that we want to maintain some sort of order in society. How will we maintain that order in society? We don't know what to do. So Chazal tell us that suffix mamon lekula. By saying suffix mamon lekula, actually, we're accomplishing exactly what the Torah meant to accomplish with Lo Sigzel. What did the Torah mean to accomplish when it said Lo Sigzel? That a person should know that if he has something, it's his, and he need not be concerned about it. That's not going to be kept by him. So if the entire goal of the Torah is to make sure that everybody's property is protected and that there isn't, so to speak, a free-for-all, so, and that's why Lo Sigzel, don't take something that doesn't belong to you. Included in the Lo Sigzel is that we have to come up with a solution when there's a suffix. Because if we won't come up with a solution of a suffix, there's going to be anarchy. Nobody will know what's his, what's he allowed to use and what he's not allowed to use. So on the contrary, suffix mamon lekula is actually accomplishing what Lo Sigzel wants us to accomplish, that the people should know what is theirs and what is not theirs, what they may use and what they may not use. And that's exactly what we're trying to accomplish. Ravina has a different approach. Ravina Amma Loi Kapti. People don't care about people walking into other people's property. So says the Gemara, if that's the case, why am I sechting the Dorim? In the case of that nether, may I now walk in? Ha'mani Rabbi Eleza hi? It represents the opinion of Rabbi Eleza, Tanya Rabbi Eleza, I'm a filu vitor, also in Mado Hanoa. It's very common that if somebody buys something in a store and they're weighing it out and they're pouring, they give a little extra. Vito means that they give a little extra above what the amount I paid for. And that's very common that storekeepers would do. But Rabbi Eleza says that even though that's common and fine, and maybe even admirable, when you're dealing with a person that you made a nether, can't have enough from you, there's a much higher level of kpeda, of being upset. And therefore, by nedarim, the halacha is very different than it is in all other situations. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Shimon Rabbi Noah, b'kol ha-shutfim makn zezeh, partners who own a property together could be upset about people doing things in their property, chutz mekvisa. Except laundry. If one partner wants to do laundry in the private chatzar, the other partner may not stop him. Shein Dakan Shabbanos Yisrael is Bazaz al Kfisa. We can't expect Jewish women to do the laundry in a public area. Their sleeves go up. It's not something that a Jewish woman should be doing in a public area. And therefore, a partner can't stop the other partner's family from doing laundry in their property. The Pasuk says in Yeshaya, V'oitzim eina merois bara, Amar Rab Chibar Abba zeh she'em stakel b'noshim. The Pasuk here is referring to an individual who doesn't look at women b'shor sh'aymnus al kvitza when they're doing laundry. And Rabbeinu Gershom says that this halacha is not just about Jewish women, about non-Jewish women as well, because you're not supposed to look at women when they're not in a situation of tznius.
So ask the Gemara, how do we understand that pasuk? The pasuk says that oitzim ena miris barab. Well, who is this pasuk speaking to? If the person could have walked in another way to avoid seeing what he's not supposed to see, that and he walked there, so then he's a rasha. And if there is no other option, so what do we want from him? Honest who? Says the Chavetz Chaim. That even though normally the halacha, he quotes the Gemara Masechta Pesachim, Daf Chaf Hei Amud Beis, teaches us that if somebody is an honest, it's beyond my control, I'm not a rasha. He says when it comes to issues of tznius, it's very different. And when we speak about inyanim of tznius, a person has to go out of his way. He has to go out of his way to avoid anything that could be a lack of tznius, because going to such a place where it could cause an issue of a tznius issue is much more serious. And therefore, v'afilo hachi, says the Gemara, mibayle lemeinus nafshe, a person has to go out of his way to do whatever, a person has to go out of his way to do whatever he can to avoid this. Ramosha, the Igros Moshe, says that it's a situation of a Vizrai de Gila Rais. The way Ramosha, I think, it means to explain the Gemara, is that we know by all Averis, a person, if he's honest, if it's beyond his control, he's allowed, we take that into consideration. But says Ramosha, here we're talking about a Rais. And when we're speaking about a Rais, it's a whole different situation. And I saw that the Paiskim, in discussing this halacha, what would be the halacha if you could walk there and just cover your eyes? Would that be satisfactory? So the Alshach says that the Pasuk says by the episode with Noach, the Pasuk V'yikah Shem V'yefes is a similar, V'yisimu Al-Shem Shneem V'yelcha Achrayinus V'yichasus Ervas Aviyem. The Torah says that when they wanted to cover their father and not look at what they weren't supposed to see, they didn't just close their eyes. They walked backwards. If closing your eyes alone would be satisfactory, why did they have to walk backwards? From here we see that closing your eyes alone is not enough. Says the Gemara, "Bar minei Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Noah, chaluk shel talmid chacham keitzad? How does the garment of a talmid chacham look?" Says the Gemara, "Kol shein b'sar nir mitachtav. Anything that the clothing, any that it's not, you can't see his body under it." Machlokes Rashbam and Rambam had to learn this Gemara. The Rashbam seems to learn the Gemara that it's referring to they should be transparent, and the Rambam seems to be learning that the Gemara is speaking about the length. They have to cover his feet, cover the entire body. Tal shatam chokin ketzad kol she'en chalukah nir mitach the tefach. The talus covers anything, any garment under it. I saw that a very nice shot. What is it in the Sefer Oruch Yisharim? What does it mean kol she'en nir b'sar mitachtav? What it means to say is that the talus of a Talmud Chacham represents a person who learns Torah. Somebody who learns Torah, everything about him is encompassed with the Torah. The Torah covers his entire being. And that's who a Talmud Chacham is. When do we recognize that an individual is a Talmud Chacham? When his Torah permeates everything he does. Shochet shel Talmud Chacham keitzad. Says the Gemara, shnei shlishi gedil. Two-thirds are covered by a tablecloth. V'shlish galoi, and one-third is uncovered. V'olav, and on the pot that's uncovered, kars v'yerika, the plates and the vegetables. And that's the mount that is uncovered. And the posh p'shan in the Gemara is because we don't want that he doesn't want that his things should get dirty. And therefore, the part with his food that could get dirty is covered. The other part is left open. For tabatoi, there was a ring typically on the table. I saw the Mefarshim explain that why did they typically have this ring? They had this ring that they would hang up the table on a hook. And the ring should be on the outside, not on the side where you're eating,
because if the ring is on the side that you're eating, you could hurt yourself with it. Ask the Gemara, Budna Braisa says, Tabatim Bifnim. Answers Gemara, Lakasha. Hadikinuka, if you're eating with children and they're sitting on that side of the table where there's a ring, they could hurt themselves. So put the ring on the other side. Hadikinuka, if there's no children there, then you don't have to worry about it and you could put the ring on the other side. Ibai say, Mahava, Hadikinuka, there's no children. If there's a waiter, so the waiter is standing on that side of the table, so we don't want him to hurt himself, so put the ring on the other side. If there is no waiter, we don't have to be worried. By day, the waiter could see the ring, and since by day the waiter could see the ring, he could be careful not to hurt himself. When it's dark, the waiter can't see, and therefore he should not have the ring in a place where he could hurt himself. Says the Gemara, V'shalam ha'aretz toima. How does the table of a Talmud, of a Amaretz look? A Madura, like a five, a Kederev, Makifas, I saw, it has food all over. And again, the lesson being that Amaretz doesn't care about cleanliness and he's just concerned about what he eats. That's the only thing that's on his mind. Mita Shal Talmud Chacham Ketzet. How does the bed of a Talmud Chacham look? Koshen Techtea, El Asan Labim Maisachama, Uminolim Bim Maisak Shaman. It only has the shoes under the bed, nothing else. Shalom Aretz, when we speak about the bed of a Ta'am Aretz, it's Oitzabalim, you have everything on under the bed. So I saw different pshatim in this Gemara. Rashi seems to learn, you don't want people to walk into the bedroom, because in the bedroom, there are private things done. So therefore, you keep only the minimum, just the shoes under the bed, nothing else. Another explanation, which the Rashbam says, because under the bed is where you under the bed is where there's a ruach ra, and therefore we don't want to have food or other things under the bed. And the halacha will be, according to Rashbam, if there's food under a bed, then you wouldn't be allowed to not eat that food. It's ruach ra. There is a discussion in the Paiskim, if babies are in a carriage, that they're sleeping in the carriage, and there's food put under it, is that an issue? And Amaretz doesn't care about who people walk in the room, and therefore therefore he keeps things under his bed. The Shvus Yaakov actually uses this Gemara to say that even though we just learned that something should not be put under the bed, and there's a problem of Ruach Ra, the Shvus Yaakov says from here we see that B'di'evid, if something was put under a bed, it's not going to become Asur. Because the Gemara only says that so is the bed of an Amaretz. And since that is the bed of Amaretz, that's why so it's not great, but it's not something that should deserve that, not saying that the food becomes usur. Why is there a Ruach Ra under the bed? So the Sefer Taras Chaim explains, because a person sleeps on the bed. And when a person sleeps on the bed, we know that Shina, sleeping, is sort of Echem Yishishim Shamisa. It's a 60th of death. And of course, death represents the highest level of Tumah. So if death represents the highest level of Tumah, under a bed is a place of Tumah. The Chasam Sofer has a different pshat in this Gemara. He says, what is the difference between a Talmud Chacham and a Maaretz? Everybody has to sleep, explains the Chasam Sofer. But a Talmud Chacham goes to sleep, and as soon as he is rested, he quickly jumps out of bed and goes to do what he has to do. So the only thing that he needs to have under his bed are his shoes. He wakes up, he gets dressed, puts on his shoes, and goes to do what he has to do. Amaretz, however, unfortunately, is a person is who, even though if he's rested, he stays in bed, and he's busy laying on bed, and he has... So it doesn't mean necessarily the things that are kept under the bed. What it represents is that the bed is a place that's a part of his life. It's not just there because I have to rest to be able to go further. And that's the difference, he says, between a Talmud Chacham and a Amaretz.